Hello, fellow crime lovers. Welcome back to another episode of My Favorite Murderers. We are your hosts, Bailey Worth
and Macy Shao.
And today's episode is all about the one and only Ted Bundy.
I'm sure you guys all know who he is, since his popularity has spiked since his death. We wanted to find out why America is still so obsessed with the serial killer, so we decided to dig deep.
The question we are going to answer in this podcast is, what is America's obsession with Ted Bundy?
The other night, I was looking through Netflix, trying to figure out what to watch, when I saw the new Ted Bundy tapes featured. So that got me thinking, isn't he already dead? Why are people still so obsessed with him?
So, before we start answering that question, we'll need to have a bit of a backstory of Ted Bundy. The debate between nature versus nurture is ongoing, whether or not violent crimes could be passed down through blood, such as genetic traits, or does someone become one from the environment and experience. In the Ted Bundy case, nature was not the case. Growing up, Ted Bundy had good involved parents and lived in a good neighborhood in Philadelphia, surrounded with lots of children to play with in a wide forest area.
However, at a young age, Ted was teased a lot because he was always slow compared to the other kids, and was behind in activities such as shooting and tying knots. However, he was fascinated by knives, scaring people, and even made tiger traps that a girl accidentally stepped in, causing her leg to have a huge cut. In high school, Ted wanted to be a president and wanted to be number one. However, he wasn't. He was shy and didn't attend parties and wasn't interested in dating.
Ted Bundy went to the University of Washington and graduated with a bachelor in psychology. Ted then worked at Dan Evans' campaign for re-selection while volunteering at the Seattle Crime Commission. During his time volunteering, he was able to access statistics and what the police do and don't do. With this information, Ted was able to know what the police stations were weakened and could use it to his gain.
On April 1974, Linda Ann Haley, a 21-year-old student from the University of Washington, became missing and didn't show up for work for 2 days. Many people noticed as she was a ski weather reporter at a popular radio station. This was strange because the people around her said she was a reliable and a responsible person. There was no evidence in her room, which was the last place she was seen at, except for blood on her neatly folded bed. 2 months later, another girl, Georgian Hawks, who was also from the University of Washington, was missing. And then there was Gail Manson, Susan Rancourt, Roberta Park, Brenda Ball, who all disappeared, and now there were 6 unsolved cases in the past 6 months. No evidence was found, and no suspects were made as the community grew uneasy.
At Lake Sammish, Denise Nasland and Janice Ott were missing, and witnesses saw a tan/yellow Volkswagen car and a guy approaching Janice and greeting with Ted. All the girls were similar in appearance and with similar hair, and all left personal items during the abductions. On August 8, 1974, Ted's girlfriend Liz Klopfer was concerned about her boyfriend Ted Bundy, as he would say he tried not to follow girls, and found a bag of undergarments and house keys in his apartment and a knife in his car, connecting to when Ted said his first victim was abducted and he threatened her with a knife and killed her as a way of destroying the evidence.
Liz gave a picture of Ted to the police, which was then showed to the 8 Lake Sammish witnesses, and all but 7 positively said that wasn't him. As no more crimes were committed, the case became dead and Ted moved to Utah for law school, while becoming a member of the Mormon Church. In the summer of 1974, the police chief's daughter, Melissa Smith, was murdered after going to a restaurant and leaving early to go home, only to have never made it home. They found her body beaten and strangled with nylon stockings.
2 others in Utah disappeared, Nancy Wilcox and Laura Amy, who were found beaten up and raped. But the connections weren't made with Washington, as police don't talk to other states. Little did Ted Bundy know that Carol Durant would be his lone survivor. We actually had Carol come by and tell us her story. Good afternoon, y'all.
Good afternoon, Carol. Can you tell us and the listeners what happened on November 1974 and how you were able to escape Ted?
It's been a long time since I managed to escape Ted Bundy, but it is as fresh on my mind as the day I went to the police station. So yeah, of course I can. I remember it was a Friday and I was at the mall because I was bored, window shopping. And a man who he said was a policeman approached me from the behind. He told me that someone had been caught breaking into my car and asked me to follow him to identify if anything stolen. I was surprised and followed him in my car, but I didn't see anything stolen, and I told him that, but he kept insisting to look. And I got an iffy feeling about him and was uncomfortable at that point. He then told me to come with him to the police station to report the theft, and so I got into his Volkswagen, which, now that I look back, was the worst decision I have ever made. He wasn't driving a police car, and I had asked him to show me proof, which he did, so I didn't think much about it. But then he pulled up to an elementary school, and I got scared, and he grabbed my wrist and handcuffed one of my hands and pulled out a gun. I was petrified, and my life flashed before my eyes, literally. But I found the door and got out of the car, and he wrestled with me on the ground with a crowbar that I was trying with all my might to not hit me. It all happened so quickly, so it became blurry. But a car passed by, and I jumped in to go to the police station and later told them the story.
Thank you, Carol, for your story. It must still be so traumatizing to have to go through it still.
Yes, but I'm glad the police had finally found who he is and the outcome that happened. He was ruthless, and I can still see his blankless eyes staring at me.
The man who abducted Carol was then angry and killed someone 4 hours later, Deborah Kent. And in the parking lot in which Deborah was taken, a handcuff key was found that fits the handcuffs on Carol Duranche. Meanwhile, up in Washington, they found Brenda Ball's skull in the woods of Taylor Mountain along with the other bodies a few feet apart. The 8 missing girls' bodies were found. The animals had destroyed all the evidence, finishing Ted's work, and without the technology police have today, they were unable to do much with the bones.
In Colorado, Karen Campbell disappeared from Snowmass's Wildwood Inn. After eating dinner, she was going on an elevator to her second floor room to get a magazine. 36 days later, her nude body was found 2 miles away and had enough evidence to know that her time of death was 2 hours after dinner. Two more girls, Julie Cunningham and Denise Oliverson, went missing. Ted Bundy was caught later for trying to evade the police while driving at 2 a.m. in a Volkswagen.
The police found a brown bag with a ski mask, ice pick, strips of torn sheets, handcuffs, pantyhose, and a pry bar. Ted's physical description matches Carol, which made the police suspicious and asked him to come to the precinct. Carol recognized him instantly and confidently said that this was a man who tried to abduct her. But the publicity of Ted being charming and good-looking and in college made people question Carol. They later went to court, and Ted was found guilty. He was interviewed along with his family and friends by a psychologist. His family all said that he was wonderful, but his ex-girlfriends all say there's a dark side to him.
For example, he once submerged his girlfriend's head underwater, and when she couldn't take it anymore, she got a breath of air, only to be pushed back into the water. He also found out at 14 that he was an illegitimate child with an unknown father. His mother wanted to leave him, but her parents made her bring Ted to them to raise. Ted denied it all and said he didn't care. His grandpa was violent, and he had a violent side as well, so the psychologist wrote that he wasn't safe and should go to prison, which he did.
The police searched Ted's house and found evidence that he was at Snowmass Wildwood Inn, as they found magazines of the inn, gas slips within a few miles near Carol, and a witness saw him at the elevator Carol used.
Ted Bundy was an incredibly intelligent man who would do anything to avoid the criminal justice system. Episode 3 of the Ted Bundy tapes discusses his escapes and what happened when he was finally found again. During recess of one of his hearings, he decided to go to the court library to read up on some things in order to better his argument. However, it quickly turned into an escape. He saw an opportunity and he ran with it. Bundy jumped out of a second-story window of the courthouse and ran.
Now, this happened in Aspen, which is a small town in Colorado. The police made the decision to check every car leaving Aspen, hoping to find him. They also sent about 150 policemen into the hills of Colorado to look for him there. He had been missing for 6 days before they finally caught him during a traffic stop. This caused escape and theft to be added to his list of charges. He was then put in prison, and on December of 1977, he escaped out of his prison cell and took a complicated route all the way to Florida.
While he was on the lim, he killed 2 sorority girls in Chi Omega at Florida State University. He injured 3 others there. Later on, while he was still on the run, he took Kim Leach from her middle school and killed her. After missing for 46 days this time, he was eventually found and arrested in Pensacola, Florida. However, the cops who arrested him didn't know who Bundy was because he gave them a fake identity.
However, Bundy was still their main suspect for the Chi Omega murders, so they began questioning him. He made a deal with the cops, and he identified himself in return for one phone call. He called his girlfriend, Liz. After this, he was indicted and sent back to prison. In episode 4 of the Ted Bundy tapes, it talks more about his final trial all the way through his execution. The forensic evidence against Bundy was a little sketchy during his trial. The key piece of forensic evidence that they had against Bundy was the bite markings. His attorney tried to get a plea that would result in Bundy going to prison for the rest of his life instead of him being placed on death row. However, Bundy turned it down.
So then, he was so interested in his own case that he decided to be a co-counsel for his case, which was odd because he wasn't a lawyer. Bundy was not a typical defendant. He was very confident, even cocky, which sometimes led to him being very impulsive and erratic. He always tried to defer the trial away from the murders. He thought that he was clever enough to get out of being convicted, but he wasn't. Another thing he did during his trial that was odd is he cross-examined the chief of police who was at the crime scene at the Chi Omega house. He also decided to fire one of his attorneys mid-trial. During his trial, many girls showed up to court to cheer him on.
Even though he was a murderer, girls were still fascinated with him. He failed to show up to one of his court hearings, which caused him to be charged with contempt of the court. The jury deliberated for 6.5 hours before reaching their decision, which was that Ted Bundy was guilty of the Chi Omega murders. The jury then had to deliberate as whether to sentence Bundy to death row or to life in prison. Their decision was the death penalty. Bundy was later charged for the murder of Kim Leach. In this case, Bundy decided to represent himself in court.
There was an impromptu wedding ceremony between Bundy and one of his witnesses, Carol Boone. The morning after the trial, the jury had reached a decision, which was that he was guilty of the murder of Kim Leach. He was sentenced to death row for this murder also. After being on death row for a while, his attorney decided to go to an appeals court to get a retrial to see if he was incompetent to stand trial.
During this, he was diagnosed to be maniac depressive. Ted Bundy and his counsel had won 2 stays of execution, and then the U.S. Supreme Court denied their final request for a stay. On January 21st, 1989, 3 days just before his execution, Bundy decided to confess to all 30 of the murders he had committed. He also admitted to necrophilia. He was executed on January 24, 1989, in Florida's electric chair.
So that's Ted's background, but what makes people still want to talk about him, and what makes people want to make movies about him? Why are we still so fascinated by serial killers? Well, there have been studies that show that it's similar to the sensation as watching horror movies. It causes an increase of heart rates, shorter breaths, blood glucose levels, and a dose of dopamine, which is associated with pleasure, food, sex, and sometimes fear. It's been said that death and gore causes arousal and grabbing our attention, and we are curious people, so being fascinated with death is actually what makes us human.
Ted Bundy is like an avatar for our darkest selves. He was so charming that even 40 years after his trial and 30 years after his death, Bundy's charm still continues to captivate and perplex his audience. Many people believe Ted was not guilty for his crimes and made people wander between the contrast between a personable, engaging man to a ruthless killer, which is what he was. He, however, confessed in his final days. This year is the 30th anniversary of Ted Bundy's death. This is also potentially one of the reasons why more and more shows keep coming out about him. Most people say Ted Bundy would be glad to know that we are all still talking about him. He was so enticing that America is still obsessed with learning about him and the things he did.
We have here today Joe Berlinger, the director of the new movie Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile, that is being released soon. As I'm sure most of our listeners are aware, your new movie features Zac Efron as Ted Bundy and the actress Lily Collins as Ted's girlfriend Elizabeth Klopfer. So Joe, what made you want to direct this movie?
This movie gives me a chance to subvert the serial killer genre and turn it on its head a bit. It's not your typical serial killer movie with an escalating body count and the police tracking down the clues as they come upon the crime scene after crime scene. This is from the point of view of Bundy's longtime girlfriend, who believed he was innocent because Bundy was such a charming, well-liked person and a wonderful boyfriend to this woman. For me, spending a lot of time in this world of true crime and criminal justice, and specifically wrongful convictions, I've had to spend a lot of time evaluating people's claims of innocence and making sure that I believe that they're telling me the truth. I've always wondered if they aren't telling me the truth. Bundy is the classic example of that. He denied his crimes, and unlike many serial killers, he claimed he was being wrongfully accused until the last few days of his life before his execution because he thought it would buy him more time. For me, it taps into that phenomenon.
What was it like working on the documentary of Ted Bundy's life and also a dramatic movie about Ted at the same time?
Well, it was very helpful that all the department heads had access to the documentary in terms of authenticity. But it was also liberating. I could focus on one aspect of his story, and I would have another work coming out that would answer questions raised by that movie. I could tell through a narrative, as well as his relationship he had with this woman, as all this mayhem unfolds, such as how the name of the new movie actually came from Ted Bundy's trial, since the judge described Ted's crimes as extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile, which you would understand and make that connection when you watch the documentary.
Now, many people are quite upset about this movie, as you probably have heard, and the increasing backlash your movie has had on the public, because it paints Ted Bundy as being incredibly attractive and charming, and makes parents especially concerned about their kids lusting over a serial killer. So what would you say to that?
Well, I mean, we're portraying Ted as who he really was, which was that he was very charming and manipulative during his trials. People didn't believe that he committed those gruesome crimes, and they supported him. Many women were attracted to Ted, which is what we're doing in this movie. We're just telling the story how it is, and the facts are that Ted Bundy was irresistible, especially to women.
Yeah, that's a fair point of view. Thank you, Joe, for being here today, and I cannot wait to see your new movie, Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile. So that's about all the time we have together for today's podcast. A special thank you to Carol DeRaunch and director Joe Berlinger for coming in and speaking with us today. And as always, thank you to our listeners about today's topic, Ted Bundy, and what is America's obsession with him.